Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports, brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
Pedro, let me say congratulations on your long time in radio. You are your team and for your ratings, man. I was reading about that. I'm very impressed with you, Pedro.
And now, the host of the longest running fight show in radio and internet history.
I don't want to predict this fight, but, you know, I'm going to promise that I can give a good fight, you know, to make people happy, and I just do my best.
Pedro Fernandez.
If I can't teach you one way, I'll teach you another, but I'm going to get the job done.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sports Byline Broadcast Network and Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Hopefully my last remote broadcast for a while as this coronavirus thing seems to be subsiding as far as maybe going to the studio next week. Hopefully they'll spray it down, do all that Clorox kind of stuff. And me being the metrosexual that I am, you know, when I go in that studio, it's going to be like, I'm going to be like sterilizing everything. So the bottom line is let them clean it first, and I'll come and I'll clean it myself, and hopefully we can get back to, you know, the regular studio action. Because while radio via remotes can be, you know, it can be cool, it can be fun. Once in a while, you'd like a show from Cancun, you do a show from Malaga, Spain, or something like that, from the Hotel of Fear. I call that the Hotel of Hell over there, the Hotel of Hell there in Malaga, Spain. But anyway, you know, I mean, remotes are cool, but to do them on a regular basis, it sort of gets a little low. Besides, you need to look at that producer right in the eye through the glass. Of course, when he's screaming at you and throwing things at the glass that you listeners can't see, bottom line is I miss all that kind of good stuff. And, of course, the Sports Byline man, Mr. Scott Cuddy. That being said, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. My name is Pedro Fernandez. In this hour of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, the first couple of segments, I'm going to concentrate on a forgotten genius, the man that was considered the Einstein of boxing, a man that the mob tried to beat up. They couldn't get him to do things for him, so they beat him up. They hit him over the head with a pipe. He had to retire from boxing for a while. He trained the two greatest lightweight champions of all time, Benny Leonard and Roberto Duran. I'm talking about Ray Arcel and Dick Cavett today on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Now, let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
He's done it! We have a new heavyweight champion in the world!
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
If you've listened to the show in the past, I've told you about the International Boxing Club. Of course, that was the mob run out of New York City, Madison Square Garden, that ran boxing with Frankie Carbo and Blinky Palermo. And believe it or not, Frankie Carbo, one of those guys in Atlantic City. Can't remember which one it was. It was Blinky. I met him in Atlantic City. I was blown away by this guy. It was like 1988, 1985, somewhere around there. And Frank Gelbin said to me, this is Mr. Palermo. Well, they didn't say Blinky Palermo. They said Mr. Palermo. So I shook his hand, and that was that. Anyway, bottom line is the mob ran boxing for quite a long time there. If you didn't play games with them, if you didn't get in bed with the mob, you probably didn't get very far. Bottom line is Ray Arcel was the exception to the rule. Born in Terre Haute, Indiana, back in 1899. Kid you not. When I met him, he was at the first the only Roberto Duran Wilfred Benitez fight in 1982. I said, Mr. Arcel, my name is Pedro Fernandez, and I shook his hand. I was honored just to shake his hand. I mean, he was like a legend. So anyway, he goes on and basically retires after that. I take that back. I think he worked one more fight, or might have worked. Yeah, he might have worked with Larry Holmes for the Jerry Cooney fight in 1982, but essentially retired after that. And in 1991, he sat down with iconic TV show host, I'm talking about Dick Cavett, and they rock and roll back and forth for about 20 minutes. Here's the opening segment with the legend, Ray Arcel.
Arcel. Please, quiet the mob. In Japan, they have a category called Living National Treasure. It's their way of honoring great artists and valued human individuals. We should have that here, and my guest would be one of them. Did I mention that I'm Dick Cavett? The great sports writer Red Smith called my guest tonight the first gentleman of fist fighting. He is the legendary boxing trainer Ray Arcel, whose boxing memories date incredibly back at least as far as 1916 when he saw Jack Dempsey fight. Ray Arcel has worked in the corner of such champions as Benny Leonard, Barney Ross, Tony Zale, Ezzard Charles, Roberto Duran, to name a handful. And at the age of 91, he is prominently featured in two new books, by coincidence, came out at the same time, In This Corner by Dave Anderson of the New York Times, and a book called Corner Men by Ron Fried. I happen to mention that one because he happens to be the producer of this program. And he's so fair that he insisted I mention both books. Anyway, Ray Arcel, welcome, and nice to see you once again. Can you recreate for us your first boxing memory? I think it was Dempsey.
Yes. Said,
yeah.
We used to hang around in a barber shop on 111th Street in Lenox Avenue, New York. And the man who owned the barber shop was John Reisler.
Yeah.
And he was a boxing promoter. And he ran the Harlem Sporting Club. And he used to talk about the great fighter he brought from the coast. And he's talking about Jack Dempsey. Well, none of us knew anything about Jack Dempsey at that particular time. And I was just a high school boy going... This 1916 I'm talking about, that's quite a few years ago. So Harlem Sporting Club, you could get into, the admission was a quarter.
Wow.
So one time we, gang of us, decided, well, we're going to go up and see this guy, Jack Dempsey. Who is he? Well, this is the third fight he had in New York City.
Yeah.
And he boxed a big black boy by the name of John Lester Johnson. That was the third fight he had.
Yeah.
In those years, there was no decision given after a fight. There were no decision fights.
You just fought the fight and went home.
Just when you were through with the fight, you just walked out of the ring. The newspaper men actually gave the decision as they saw it.
Yeah.
So we went up and we looked at Jack Dempsey and, well, he was just another fighter. I didn't know too much about boxing in those years, but I was interested in it. And he was a well-built man, and we liked his style, but he didn't impress any of us. And this
How do you account for that? That's amazing.
Well, I talked to Dempsey later on about it. I was in Los Angeles, 1925, and he owned a restaurant and a hotel, and we stayed at the hotel, and at that time he had just married Estelle Taylor.
The film actress? The actress?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I asked him one day, I said, I remember you boxing in New York in 1916. He said, don't remind me of that. He said, that was one of the worst trips I ever made. He was discouraged, and he wanted to get away from Colorado. And as we used to be around in the saloons, and he was a saloon fighter. And he told me he was just discouraged. He'd walk in there and just wanted to go through the paces. And for 10 rounds, he got the big sum of $18. So after the third fight, which I saw, didn't impress me much, he got on a train and went back home. And then he met up with Jack Kearns and went out to California, and he started his career.
He started to become Jack Dempsey.
And I always felt, in my own personal opinion, that the Jack Dempsey who fought Willard might have been given credit as the best heavyweight there was.
Would it be polite to ask you the big question? How would he have fared against Muhammad Ali in his prime?
Dempsey?
Yeah.
I think Dempsey would have beaten almost anyone.
Even Ali?
Even Ali.
Wow.
There might be a doubt as far as Joe Louis was concerned.
Really?
Joe Louis was a great fighter.
Yeah.
Muhammad Ali was outstanding, but he was a victim of circumstances. Don't forget, he had a layoff of 3 years.
Yes, unjustly.
And unjustly is right. And, of course, when he made the comeback, boxing is a sport where you cannot lose your coordination. You can't. Your reflexes are not sharp enough.
Yeah.
And
even a super athlete, 3 years off, can be devastating.
You must.
Yeah.
You must be able to see every second of the fight.
You're famous for having to keep your fighters in trim, keep them from eating, keeping them out of whorehouses, keeping them out of, did I say that? Keeping them out of all kinds of places.
Are you telling me or reminding me?
And I guess it's no secret that you're part of the reason you're 91 years old and as fit as a man of well-preserved 60,
yes.
Is that you ran with your own fighters.
You did
everything they did. You lived a clean life and tried to get them to do that. Who
well,
are your
you
notable
to remember
failures?
That no two people are alike.
Yeah.
And each fighter was different. His style was different. His thinking was different. And you had to know and understand each individual in order to be able to condition them.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were some men that could take a lot of work, and there were some people who couldn't.
Yeah.
And you had to know just how to handle these men, because it was your responsibility to condition them. And it was very easy to overtrain them, and it was very easy to do the wrong thing for them.
Does a fighter think in the ring?
The highest form of individualism, and if you don't think, you're lost. You have to think.
Yeah. That's something you always emphasize.
That's right.
I mean, we often think of fighters as not too strong upstairs.
Well, you'd be surprised how strong they really are.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you keep after them to look and understand and know everything they're supposed to do, then it becomes second nature to them.
Yeah.
It's like you learning a trade and you have somebody showing you and telling you. Then you become adjusted mentally and physically to handle the job.
Picking up on Dempsey, you said that in his prime, when he stepped into a ring, it was like seeing a tiger let loose that was about to...
Well, the Dempsey that fought Willard, I think, was one of the greatest heavyweights I've ever seen.
I have to interrupt you, Ray. We have to take a break, but we'll be right back. Stay with us. The great Ray Arcel is with us.
Ring Talk returns, part two with Ray Arcel and Dick Cavett after the break.
That was the great man, Jack Dempsey. I used to get a kick out of just seeing him sitting in the window of his restaurant in New York on Broadway. You could see him.
Yes.
He'd sit there and greet people. Hard to believe I'm sitting next to a man who was in the ring when Joe Louis fought. What memories of the great Joe come to
mind? Well, it just seemed, I don't know what it was, but 14 times I worked against Joe Louis.
Yeah.
And maybe the fourth or fifth time, and I walked to the center of the ring with the fighter. And he looked at me with a sort of a silly grin on his face.
Louis?
And he said, "Are you here again?"
I guess he got
and
used to seeing you.
We all bust out laughing, you know.
Yeah. But in Corner Man, there's a, Fried talks about the fear of knowing that a guy was going to fight Joe Louis. Some of them couldn't sleep, so he had the fight partly won before a few days before the fight.
Well, I guess if you or I were in there with him, we couldn't sleep either.
Yeah, why did they do it? You talk, one fighter went in with his legs shaking and another
nervous.
Another one forgot who he was in the ring.
It's a strange feeling. It's difficult to explain what the human mind does to you. I mean, if you're built along those lines where you can just face a problem, it becomes a problem. If you could face the problem and be mentally alert in order to be able to do it, well, then you're all right. Then you're going to go in and do a job.
Yeah.
But if you're nervous and you're high-strung and you get in there and you lose all sense of direction, and sometimes you'd be surprised. You'd have to actually wake this guy up before the fight started. I mean, they just go to pieces.
Was it fear of getting hurt, or was it fear of coming apart?
It's just nervousness. It's a nervous condition,
yeah.
Knowing. I mean, if you had to face a serious opposition momentarily, you might go in there and do it.
Uh-huh.
But if you have to wait 3 weeks or a month and prepare yourself and go through all the motions of training and listen to all the advice that you're getting, I mean, by the time the fight arrives, you're a lost soul.
It's over.
If you're not built that way.
Have you ever had to fight to defend yourself in real life, punch a guy out?
Many times.
Yeah. Oh, you have?
Many times.
Because the thing people always say about you is he's such a gentleman. He's one of the few great men of our time, and he doesn't seem to belong in boxing.
There are a lot of gentlemen in boxing, a lot of.
How many guys did you punch? You don't have to answer that. You don't think of boxing as a Jewish sport. I think a lot of people don't. And yet, the great Benny Leonard, of course, comes to mind right away.
Well, you have to understand that in the early part of the century, there were a lot of people, especially Italian people and Jewish people, who came to New York. They settled. The Jewish people settled on the Lower East Side, and the Italian people settled either in Harlem or on the west side of the Bowery. And, of course, there weren't many opportunities for anyone to go out and earn any money. And young men, I mean, they had to do something in order to be able to get that nervous situation out of them. They were on the streets all the time, and they were fighting all the time. And when the opportunities arose for them to go into boxing clubs and earn some money, well, they gladly accepted it. And some of them had a lot of natural ability.
And they turned their street skills into cash.
Yes, I mean, you take Benny Leonard. His father used to earn $8 a week as a presser.
Clothes presser.
Now, Benny Leonard had a lot of natural talent as a boxer. I mean, it was just a God-given gift. And he attracted a lot of the young guys. Every time he boxed, they'd get a little bus and they'd all pile on the bus and go to a fight club. And this particular day, Benny Leonard's mother happened to be standing downstairs on the stoop, and she saw all these people going into this bus and wondering, what is it? And she asked one of the neighbors. And she said, the neighbor said, this is a fighter, a prize fighter. And she said, wonder who is it? So the neighbor said, that's your son. And she thought that this was a disgrace, that her son to be a prize fighter.
Should have been a doctor.
It was terrible. And she went upstairs and she was crying, waiting for the father to come home. And this poor guy, he had put in a day's work and he probably got home about 9 o'clock at night. And she started to cry and to tell him what happened. So the father said, "Well, where is he?" She says, "I don't know." So he said, "Well, when he comes home, you tell him I want to see him." So when Benny came home, his father called him in the bedroom. He says, "What are you doing? You are disgracing the family. What is this all about?" So Leonard had earned $35 for his fight. And he took the $35 out and gave it to his father. And his father, it was more money than he had seen. I mean, he says, "What is this?" So Leonard says, "That's what I got for the fight." And after scolding him, he looked at him. He says, "That's what you got for the fight for one night?" He says, "Benny, when are you going to fight again?"
So that from then on, it was uphill. What about, who was the fighter who had to pose as your valet? I'm thinking of a guy, a black fighter who, in those days, you insisted on staying in the same hotel, and the only way you could do it was by trickery?
Well, you had to use all kinds of tricks, and especially in the capital of the United States, you couldn't get a black boy to stay at any of the hotels there unless you went to some dilapidated place. And I was training a fellow by the name of Jimmy Bivens. Bivens was an outstanding heavyweight. Mm-hmm. And he was training to fight as a child at that particular time. And the hotel that they set up for us, I wouldn't put an animal in there. So I had a friend of mine who was a manager of one of the big hotels. And I walked in there with Jimmy Bivens and I said, "I'm going to stay here," and I brought my valet with me. The guy looked at me, he looked at him. He says, "Only one?" I said, "Yes."
Yeah.
He says, "I heard a lot of things." He said, "But this takes the cake." So I said, "Look, I got a double room. He'll sleep in one bed, I'll sleep in the other." He says, "When you order the food, put him in the bathroom." And I said, "Well, I can only order for one." He says, "Well, you can eat in the coffee shop." And that's the way it was.
Had to go through that. So that means, of course, there were a hell of a lot of black fighters who never, ever got the chance.
And I started to work with Ezra Childs. Ezra Childs had 10 guys around with him all the time. I don't know where they came from or what. Mm-hmm. But wherever he went, they were there, freeloading and all the time. And you couldn't get hotel space. Yeah. We were in Ogden, Utah.
We have to hold Utah for just a minute while we take a message that applies to people in all states, and we'll be right back.
We're going to wrap things up with Dick Cavett and Ray Arcel after the break. You tune to Ring Talk live on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network.
Now, let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Well, he was beautiful, wasn't he? I'm talking to the great Ray Arcel, and one of the things that's interesting in this book is the art of cut closing, of healing a cut in the minute between rounds. People had various formulas and things. One guy used chewing tobacco.
Well,
or you thought he did, anyway.
There was only one man that used it, and he was one of my teachers.
Uh-huh.
And in those days, people used to go to the small... The fight clubs were small, and everybody was smoking. And you had to have to swing a towel in order to be able to give the fighter a chance to get a breath of air.
Yeah.
And this man, Doc Bagley was his name, he chewed tobacco. And he had an uncanny ability to be able to stop the flow of blood when there was a cut by taking the chewing tobacco out of his mouth and placing it up against the cut. And I used to swing the towel and watch this with great admiration and say, oh, if I can only do that. And one particular night, he called me and told me that he couldn't get over to Jersey City because he was ill, and would I go over with the young fighter and handle him? Well, the first thing I did was I bought a plug of tobacco.
Sure.
And I got over there and was sitting ringside, and here was an imaginary flow of blood, and I took a bite of this tobacco, and the last thing I knew, I was in an ambulance. I was underneath the ring. And people didn't know what happened. They thought I had appendicitis or whatever it was, and they didn't know that I swallowed the tobacco juice. And I couldn't get away from these guys. I mean, you talk about joking and kidding.
Oh,
and when I walked into Bagley's office, everybody was sitting there with a plug of tobacco, giving it to me.
Ray, we got a cut, but right at the end of the chapter in Corner Men, the fighter is quoted as saying, Billy Sousa was, Arcel is one of the finest men I've ever met, and what he taught us was not only boxing, but also the true values of life. He was my trainer, my father, my psychologist, my teacher, my friend, and my mentor. Everybody has trouble describing how wonderful you are, but that comes as close as anything. Thank you for being here, and I'm not even going to let you deny all of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got to spend a lot of time around a lot of people, a lot of great people in the boxing game. Angelo Dundee, I can go on, Muhammad Ali, I can go on and on. But the bottom line was, I never got to spend time around the genius that was Ray Arcel. I mean, him getting hit over the head by a pipe with a pipe and the mob essentially telling him, if you don't play our game, you don't play. But he didn't play that way. Ray just wasn't that type of guy. And of course, I remember Duran. The fight with Benitez, that was sort of a bit of a disappointment there, but they tried to get him in the best of shape they could, but Roberto wasn't listening to people. Of course, he would come back later and beat Davey Moore and almost beat Marvin Hagler, and then, of course, beat Iran Barkley, probably in his crowning moment in 1989, considering he was born in 1951. Straight up, Roberto Duran, one of the greatest fighters of all time. But the first lightweight champion that Mr. Arcel had was Benny Leonard. Had a weird name, the Ghetto Wizard. Collins, originally born Benjamin Lanier, in 1896, April 7th, 1896 in New York City. But the Ghetto Wizard, I mean, pretty accomplished boxer, no doubt about that. I mean, 70 knockouts and, wow, considered the greatest lightweight of all time, maybe with the exception of Roberto Duran. So imagine that, this guy training the two greatest lightweights of all time. So I never got to put him on the spot and say, oh, maybe, you know, who was a better guy? Who was it? Was it Benny Leonard or was it Roberto Duran? Because you heard him say there, that he thought that Jack Dempsey could have beat, you know, Muhammad Ali or Joe Lewis. No, he said he probably didn't have, He said that Joe Louis would have the best shot against beating an in-prime Jack Dempsey. Well, Jack Dempsey could have tried that stuff with Muhammad Ali. He would have ate that stiff jab a couple of times, and he wouldn't have got in close. That's just the way it is. I mean, the fact that Joe Frazier got in close, a lot of that had to do with the fact that Joe was a good fighter. He was relentless. But Ali had lost a step at that point in time. In the 3.5-year exile, you heard Ray Arcel talk about that. You know, being off 3.5 years. I mean, here was a man that ballooned in weight to 250 pounds. Ballooned. I know that sounds terrible, but that's the way it was. He told me, I said, "Where were you walking around?" He goes, "Oh, about 250. You know, I'm walking around about 250. When he did the Marciano fight, of course, he did fight Rocky Marciano. Rocky Marciano being the only heavyweight champion in history to retire undefeated, 49. Of course, he retired a bit early, said he had a back injury. I think it was Sonny Liston come breathing down his neck, and maybe Floyd Patterson as well. But the bottom line is, you know, Marciano was undefeated, and they had this fantasy fight between he and Muhammad Ali. I think it was in 1966 or 67, one or the other. And, of course, it was three different endings to the fight. One Ali won, one there was a draw, and one that Marciano won. And believe it or not, I know it just kills me to say this, but the one that they posted as far as the official ending of the movie was Marciano beating Ali, I think, on a knockout. So that was a bit of a stunner. Of course, I talked to Ali about that, on his chances against or his fighting Rocky Marciano. He said he had a whole lot of respect for Marciano. He would have kept his hands up, and that Marciano wouldn't have been able to do what he did to those other guys. Those other guys he was able to explode on. He wouldn't have been able to explode on Cassius Clay or Muhammad Ali. He just wouldn't have had the distance. There's no doubt about that. Speaking of Cassius Clay and Muhammad Ali, there was a guy that always brought humor to boxing. I mean, every once in a while, there'd be a fight coming on, and you watch him on The Tonight Show, and he'd always incorporate boxing into his stand-up comedy. I talk about the great George Carlin. Here's George Carlin on Cassius Clay.
And the big fight is coming up. Ali and Frazier, Muhammad Ali. I call him Muhammad Ali because that's what he wants. Oh, yeah, he's a big dude, and he hits hard, you know. I'll call him what he wants. But it's good that he's being allowed to work again. As you know, he couldn't work for 3 years. Of course, he had a strange job beating people up. But that was his right. He could have that job. Government wanted him to change jobs. Government wanted him to kill people. He thought it over, and he said, "No, that's where I draw the line. I'll beat him up, but I don't want to kill him." And the government told him, "Well, if you won't kill him, we won't let you beat him up." And it was all because he didn't want to go to Vietnam, and now we're getting out of Vietnam through Laos and Cambodia. It's got to be the long way. We got to go through China and Russia to get out that way. What are we going to tell them? We'll only be here a short time. Just looking for a trail. Well, maybe they'll go for it. I don't know. Of course, we're only there in Southeast Asia for one reason, to free the people so they can have industry. Isn't that what we do everywhere, I think? We kind of free people and then lay a little industry on them so they can have all the benefits of industry that we have. Oh, beautiful for smoggy skies, insecticided grain, for strip-mined mountains, majesty above the asphalt plain. America, America, man sheds his waste on thee and hides the pines with billboard signs from sea to oily sea.
What can I say? The great George Carlin, man, I saw him once in Vegas at the MGM Grand had this small club, and he was a hit. There was just no doubt about it. I mean, he was just the man. I mean, he can go back and do decades. I remember seeing him in the era of Johnny Carson Show, or take that back, the early Tonight Show in the early 1960s, along with my buddy Mort Saul, who is now 91. I think Mort's going to turn 92 in a month, but he's going to still performing in Mill Valley, California. But of course, he can't perform because of the fact that the coronavirus won't allow people to get into places. Anyway, hopefully they'll come up with a vaccine for that. And speaking of vaccines, I was reading some documentation, put forth by the World Boxing Organization. I'm talking about Francisco Vargas, the president of Paco, and he was talking about that boxing he didn't think was going to get back to normal until we actually had a vaccine. So here is a man of noted education, and he says he doesn't think boxing is going to get back to major crowds until we have a vaccine. So that's going to be interesting to figure that out. We'll see what happens there. Of course, nobody knows. Some vaccine will come along. Will the virus go away? I don't think the virus is going away. I think it will come back like the 1918 flu did. I think when we get loose with this, I think the social distancing works. If you think I'm kidding, check out Yerba Buena Island in 1918, the pandemic flu. For the pandemic was the Spanish flu back then. It was like 3 miles off the San Francisco. It was in the middle of the San Francisco Bay. Not one case emerged there, although the entire city lost thousands and thousands of people. Anyway, that's the way they did it, social distancing. Boxing and use USC as a blueprint. That's some of the websites are saying. Of course, after last night's card, the USC doing well at the Viasar Veterans Memorial Auditorium in Jacksonville, Florida. I say, why even rent out an entire arena? I mean, come on, just do this in a TV studio with a couple of rooms. I mean, why do you need to rent out an arena? Well, I guess maybe they got a contract and they got to fulfill with the contract with the venue or something like that. But I just think renting or grabbing an entire 15 or 20,000 seat venue that's going to sit empty just doesn't play well. Not in the world of MMA and not in the world of the wrestling entertainment. Speaking of WWE, suffering their worst ratings in the history of the company. The worst ratings in the history of the company. That's wow. I mean, wrestling's had some bad times before, but right now there's no superstars. And the bottom line is Vince McMahon, of course, 90 years old, in the minds of many. Of course, not quite that old. I think he's 74. But the bottom line is he's looking aged and he's still running things. And with old minds running things, you can't have young thoughts, I don't think. So I think there needs to be a changing of the guard as far as the world of wrestling entertainment is concerned. I still think it sucks. I think the product sucks. Being that, we're going to have Devin Nicholson. I'm talking about Mr. Hannibal, Hannibal TV of HannibalTV.com. He's going to be on next week's show, next Sunday's show. We're going to talk in depth about MMA and boxing with him. Of course, he's a former MMA guy. He's a professional wrestler. He's done some kickboxing. And, of course, he's got a good website going on as far as his YouTube things going on. I mean, he's got like millions of numbers. Anyway, the bottom line is his numbers are incredible. He will be part of next week's show here on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. Now, the USC, of course, is going to come back with a card. Looks like the USC on ESPN is going to go May the 13th and then come again on May the 16th. Both these cards are going to come to you from that empty auditorium, the Jacksonville Veterans Memorial Arena in Jacksonville, Florida. Of course, those events are planned. I guess they could be canceled if some health things went wrong, because one guy that did test positive to weigh in, I think, for the virus. Of course, they pulled him off the card, pulled his opponent off the card, and two of his cornermen tested positive as well. So that and the fact the virus is in the White House, what can I tell you? The virus is everywhere. Remember the virus? The president said it was just going to go away. Now it's in the White House. Holy cow. How can you deny that one? You can't. You are tuned to Ring Talk, live worldwide. Your inside look in the world of boxing and MMA. Of course, next week, we'll spend some time with Hannibal. And of course, the godfather, the retired HBO godfather, Larry Merchant. I'm going to put him on the spot on a couple of things next week. But I am digging down into the Ring Talk archives. Of course, we've got like 35, 36 years of archives, and I just don't know where to start as far as maybe like bringing out parts of an old show and things like that. Because, you know, I sound like a geek, and I really don't. I'm just kidding. I mean, I just don't say it. Sound differently. It sounds like a kid. It really do. Sound like a kid. Anyway, I'm going through these archives right now, and some of them are laughable. I kid you not, but we've done some broadcasts from all over the world. Those remotes, man, from across the pond. Those are pretty heavy. Anyway, you are tuned to Ring Talk, live worldwide, 36 plus years now. You're inside looking at the world of combat sports, coming to you live on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Gonna tell Aunt Mary about Uncle John. He claimed he had the music, but he had a lot of fun. Oh, baby. Yeah, baby.
Good old Little Richard. May he rest in peace. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, the Sunday edition. Of course, 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 hours live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, and a plethora of other internet platforms. May 8th, 1982, Ray Mancini wins the WB lightweight title with a first-round knockout of Arturo Frias. Our house historian, Bill O, says that was a bit of an early stop. Of course, May 11th, 1977, Dwayne Bobic gets knocked out by Ken Norton in 39 seconds. Taking back a first-round knockout, he was undefeated in 39 fights. In 4 years today, May 11th, 1981, Jerry Cooney knocks out Ken Norton with a first-round knockout in Madison Square Garden, ending Ken Norton's career. You've been listening to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. I want to thank, of course, my sponsors, the World Boxing Organization. You can always check out what they're doing as far as boxing is concerned. But right now, there's not a whole lot going on. As I said, Paco, Francisco Block, ourselves expecting boxing to get back on the main page once we get a virus going on. But you can always check out them, their pictures, what they're doing at WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. I got a text here, no, take that back, an email from Andy saying, last week's show on heavyweight champions was pretty cool, but I didn't go over any of the stuff, the interactions with Ali. Ali's a whole show by himself. I mean, I think I've done those before, but if you want me to do another show on Ali, I will. But the fact that I think I did every heavyweight champion I met at that point in time, I think, except I didn't talk about Tim Witherspoon in depth, but the bottom line is, outside of that, I think I covered everybody there is to cover. So bottom line is, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing and MMA. You know, there's a million things you can be doing right now. The fact that you're listening to Ring Talk Live on the Sports Byline broadcast, well, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Don't forget, Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA, airs Saturday and Sundays at 11 a.m. Pacific time on Sports Byline.